Whether you're screaming from the stands or the sofa, Virgin Bet has even more for you to shout about this season, because we're giving you a totally free bet builder on a selected football match every week this season. So get ready to make some noise. Join us and claim your bet builder free bet every week. Virgin Bet, a good bet. Use Bet Builder free bet on selected match by kickoff. Min odds evens. Max one free bet, £1 to £20. Except via pop-up. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Bet responsibly. Gambleaware.org.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here today. Tim, how you doing, bro? Broseph?
I'm good. I'm really good. Great couple days of hockey since we last chatted, which has been fun. And yeah, there's lots to talk about. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, you have a lot of losses in life, you know, and then you get a win and you feel good about yourself. And I got a win yesterday, and it just felt good with the house. I've been just struggling with the boiler, struggling with the house, lights in the wrong spot, this and that. I went out there on my own because I had to wire up the island for the microwave because our countertops came in. They look beautiful, gorgeous. And if you're sick and tired of me talking about my house, then just kick rocks because I don't care. Countertops came in, but the microwave has to be put in place. So I went out there by myself. I had to wire up the microwave. I had to adjust the outlet box. I had to kind of terminate the cable, and I had to kind of test where the wire's going. And I figured it all out. I put the breaker in the panel all by myself. I've never done it before, and I just nailed it. Power turned on. I plugged in an outlet. We got the microwave all set up. It just felt, it's a little wins because I've just been getting hammered with losses nonstop with the roof leaking and the boiler, and I'm fixing lights for my wife and just this and that and the other thing. And so it was a win, and it felt very nice. I patted myself on the back. And then yesterday, a good friend of mine, Mr. Hitt, John Hitt, he's like, come and split some wood. And there's just nothing like just throwing some wood around. You know what I mean? Two and a half hours, 3 hours of just getting after it. And it felt good. So I'm in a good mood today.
That's good. Nice. Yeah. That's nice. Yeah. Are you inching, like, can you see the end in sight in terms of moving in? Do you feel like it's right around the corner now?
Oh, yeah. No, when the countertops are in, it makes a huge difference. The painting's almost there. The mechanical guy's coming at the end of the next week to terminate all the heat pump and all that fun stuff. And baseboard heat should be in. They didn't send me my mounting package. So that's the issue with that. So I'll finish mounting those in my kids' rooms, and yeah, it's coming along. So what I wanted was end of April. It's more realistic end of May, but concrete's going in next week for my sidewalks and the apron around the house. And I pulled the trigger on the asphalt, which is a huge number for me, like just because it's a big driveway. So we're going to pave the driveway, and away we go. It's very fun. Yeah.
How much?
I'm at the point now where it's like someone's like, oh, this is going to be an extra charge. And I've already been beat down enough. I'm like, just do it. Like, I don't care. Just do it. I'm already broke as it is. Like, who cares? Just go for it. So, but it's,
are
it's
you paving fun for the driveway? Are you just paving where the new house meets the dirt road?
Yeah,
or you
not the existing.
Yeah.
So okay. For those of you listeners, my existing driveway is a good quarter of a mile long, if not a little longer. So that would be too much to pave. I'm guessing that would be $75,000 to pave that driveway.
Well, also, it's like it's going to fall apart. Like in 2 years, it'll be in just crumbs. So, yeah, that makes sense.
No, we're just doing the new because it's got a good base, gravel. It's solid, just freshly excavated. So I'm hoping it'll hold up. Speaking of holding up, there's some teams, Tim, that I'm not sure are holding up well with this playoff push. We're two games in for most of the series. Some series are three games in. And looking at this playoffs, kind of not how I thought it was going to pan out. Five teams are up 2-0. There's only one series that's tied 2-1. And obviously Colorado-Dallas have played three games and Dallas is up 2-1. We'll get to that in a second. But will we see a sweep, Tim, in the first round? Because the first round with the new jiggering, it's not often we see sweeps. very competitive first rounds. But what do you think? Are we going to see a sweep in the first round of the playoffs?
So I'm starting to think so. And I don't think I think I maybe predicted one. I don't remember which one it was. But yeah, five series at 2-0. The caveat for that, most of the, I think all of these actually are the home team that's up 2-0 and therefore the higher seed. So like these are the better teams, and the whole thing, of course, the series doesn't start. So we'll see like the next, you know, by the end of the weekend, by the next time we record, that one of these series could be over. But those listening, I'd say by Friday night, midnight, we'll know whether these teams who get the first chance to play a home game have tied this up or not, or at least have won their first game, and then, or they go down 3-0 and then the series is basically over.
Yeah. I think of the series that are two rip right now. The one team, oddly enough, that I feel will be swept is the Edmonton Oilers. I think other than the third period of game one, they've been outplayed every single period.
Yeah.
They look like a team chasing the puck. The Kings have all the energy. The Oilers are just taking penalty after penalty. The Kings are taking advantage of it. And yeah, they're the one team that I feel, man, they look like they're going to be swept. The Senators obviously lose in overtime. The Blues have played well with the Jets. They lost 2-1 last game. The Carolina and Devils series is tightening up a little bit. And then the Habs and Caps, like, it's overtime games. It's very close games. It's very competitive hockey. So the Oilers are the one team, oddly enough, that lose in game seven last year in the Stanley Cup Finals. They look out of sorts. And let's start there. Game two. Bounce back game for the Edmonton Oilers. You were wondering, will they carry the momentum from the third period over into game two? The Connor McDavid show puts up 4 points, drags them almost to overtime. Philip Deneau scores with 30 some seconds left to get the game 6-5. For sure, this veteran team will translate that into a good start for game two. Wah, wah, wah. No, it was all LA Kings the whole game. And as I'm watching this game, and we're not going to go into the goals because, yes, obviously LA wins. Edmonton's undisciplined. They're taking advantage. Adrian Kempe played terrific. I want to talk about two players in specific. It's Stuart Skinner and it's Darnell Nurse. And I know I've beat this donkey a lot with Darnell Nurse, but when you look at the goals, and you look at the outcomes and why teams lose, specifically the Edmonton Oilers, it's Darnell Nurse. He should not be in the lineup. And maybe he's in the lineup, but he should not be playing the minutes that he's playing. The guy, he plays 23, 25 minutes a game. He is predictable. He is consistently making bad reads with the puck. And he just plays too many minutes. In my eyes, you should play Jake Walman more, who's only getting 15 minutes a night. You bring this guy in from San Jose. He's a terrific defenseman. And you play Darnell Nurse less. The first goal, he's on the wrong side of the puck. He gets beat to the net, and Brandt gets his 1-0 LA. Then every single stinking power play goal the LA Kings scored, Nurse is laying on the ice, just trying to block a pass, just laying on the ice. And I know that's coached, but you shouldn't do it. If you have any other option to use your stick, as soon as you lay down, your stick is moot. It's done. You can't move around. You're just like, you're on the ice. You're done. The offensive player knows exactly where you are. And last time I checked, players can sauce the puck pretty good. Players are pretty patient with the puck these days. This isn't the olden days where you lie down and the guy just buries it into your side because he has no other option. Players want you to lay down and slide now because then they can just dink and doink around you and away we go. Nurse does it every single play. Every single time he's faced with a 2-on-1 or a power play situation where the guy has the puck on the goal line, he's just on his stomach. And it doesn't work. I don't understand why it doesn't get through his skull. Like, oh, I'm going to go down 30% of the time. The other team scores. And then we go to Stuart Skinner. It's like, okay. They finally pulled him and they put Picard in. He too little too late. He played 10 minutes. He only got three shots. It's time, right? Is it time for him to be gone now? And we talked about this last episode where, oh, Knobloch stuck with them last playoff run. You know, I'm sticking with my guy. He's the one who got us here. can we say that he's just, he's bad? He lets in five goals on 28 shots. And I know some of them weren't his fault, but when you look around the series, Tim, and you look at different goaltenders in different certain situations, and we talked about it in the last episode, getting that one big save. When you look at other teams, when Dallas goes down 1-0 to Colorado last game, Colorado could have went up 2-0, 3-0. Jake Oettinger makes that save. He makes the diving save across the crease with his blocker to rob Brock Nelson. He saves the game, because if it goes 2-0, Colorado runs away with it. The Minnesota Wild, Gustafson's making those saves to extend their lead, to continue to have success. Logan Thompson is diving across the ice to rob Slakovsky or Caulfield or whoever it is. They're making that one save. And they're not up one, they're down one. So instead of going down 2-0, you're giving your team a chance to win. Skinner, I feel like when Edmonton goes down 1-0, he goes, ooh, check your diaper, it's going to get messy. And he just gives up goal after goal after goal, and you have no confidence in him. So can we just put a fork in him? I was on his bandwagon last year when he was playing great. Times change, man. He's playing terrible. You got to get him out of the net. You can't let him start game three. What do you think, Tim? Is he playing game three?
I don't think he should. And I think I don't blame him for everything, because part of it's like you're asking him to be someone that he's not. He's just not that guy. And the Oilers have an organizational problem of not addressing this in the offseason, not addressing this at the deadline. We had all these other teams go out and get a goalie because they needed one. And Edmonton predictably needed the goalie, and here they are down 2-0, and the goalie's the main reason why. And I think the defense in front of him is also a huge reason why. But the reason that I think you don't start him, and most of all, it goes back to even the Jack Campbell days in Toronto. It changes the way the players in front of you play, right? Like, even if you, like, it's not just the goalie, it's impacting the entire team, because you play scared. You have a defenseman thinking, like, if I take a chance and it goes the other way, it's going to be a goal. I don't trust my guy to make the save. And that impacts everyone in the lineup. And that really, so I think a fresh start and a fresh goalie, even if it's just one game or something, like, I don't know. You can't keep going back to the well with this. And I feel like players expect, when they go out there and a shot on net, they basically expect him to let it in at this point. So yeah, I think you have to go with Picard in game three.
And that's why I love Steve Yzerman, because he goes out of his way to add goalies at the deadline when he doesn't even need to. And he's adding Peter Mrazek to a goaltending duo that's already old, and he just made them older and worse. So, you know, when you're getting out GM'd by Steve Yzerman, Stan Bowman, maybe we need to have a conversation. But another issue with the Edmonton Oilers is, other than the big two, McDavid and Draisaitl, and they were held pointless last game. What are we doing here? Where are we, Zach Hyman? Where are we, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Evander Kane, Adam Henrique, Victor Podkolzin, Connor Brown? All of these guys, if they have any hope, and we've been beating this drum for years, we need to see more. We have to see more. And we saw the LA Kings keyed, obviously, on the top two guys, and it worked, and they were shut out. And then they romped them. It wasn't even close. The score is 5-2. It could have been 1,000,000-1, because it was 6-2, excuse me. It was a masterclass of just domination. 3-for-5 on the power play. Outplayed them, outchanced them, just everything. It was the LA Kings. It was tilted ice. Is there any chance in your eyes for the Kings to just make this a series and come back?
The Oilers? Yeah, this is the one thing that I kind of go back to is just, not to overdo this point, but they haven't played at home yet. And so maybe there's a boost of energy. There's a crowd resurgence, whatever. Like, it really does make a huge difference for these guys. And Edmonton is a great building to play in. So maybe you see a big pushback game in game three. I think game four is going to be the one where the series goes in one direction or another. I think the Oilers take game three, and then it's like, okay, do we have a series after that? Or do the Kings take 3 out of 4? They have a chance to go close it out at home. And I think that's going to be the most important one so far.
Yeah. And let's not understate how good the Kings are playing. Let's just touch on Adrian Kempe, because he has been playing lights out, leading the NHL in scoring in the postseason, having a fantastic playoffs, and just unstoppable. He's just playing really, really good hockey. And when you look at his numbers over the years, maybe one of the most underrated stars in the league. Doesn't get the the accolades that he's due, because obviously you play with Kopitar, the high draft pick in Byfield, you got Drew Doughty, you get forgotten a little bit on the West Coast. The guy's terrific. He's playing lights out hockey. He's scoring goals. He's playing fast. He's making Andre Kuzmenko look like a superstar this playoff series. So he's the straw that stirs the drink in LA right now. It's his team. It's not Kopitar's team. He's playing fantastic. And they have depth throughout the line. The Byfield line's playing great. The nose line's playing great. So boy, oh boy. The Oilers, they're all out of sorts. I don't know. They'll get one at Edmonton, but this will be a five-game series. I don't know if they'll get swept. That would be quite the fall from grace. If you're two goals from winning the Stanley Cup the year before, and then you're out in the first round with a sweep, that's quite the fall. But then again, I'm always forward thinking. I'm such a planner. If you're 97, Tim, you got 1 year left on your contract, and you just get swept in the first round of the playoffs, are you even negotiating with Stan Bowman? Are you even talking about signing an 8-year deal? Why would you? Based on how this team has played and their projections and where we're going, there's no light at the end of the tunnel, talent-wise, on this team. They're bereft of any good prospects. Their back end is atrocious. You got the anchor Darnell Nurse signed till 2030. And but I guess if Erik Karlsson can get traded, Darnell Nurse can get traded. So there's always hope there. But boy, oh boy, do you resign? And make it a quick answer. We don't need to, you know, belay this, but would you resign if you're Connor McDavid? Because they're gonna be like, here's 15. What do you want, Connor? We want to sign you for 8 more years. Do you do it though?
Yeah, that's a tough thing because you don't know what's inside the player's mind in terms of like the location, his home, his wife, his family, all that stuff. But I will say, and I was starting to think, well, you know, it's hard for any team to build a rounded and deep roster when you're paying that much money to one person. But look at like what Colorado is doing. You know what I mean? Like you can have several superstars on your team and still have four great lines, have a good goalie, have some solid defensive depth. So yeah, I think to answer your question, I am getting more and more in him not re-signing in Edmonton. I'm leaning that way.
But here's the difference with Colorado. Edmonton, Drysdale makes 14. McDavid will want 15 or 16. Bouchard will want 10 to 12 because he's up for a new deal this year. MacKinnon makes 12. Landeskog makes 7. Nichushkin makes 6. Makar makes 9. Taves makes 7. They're not as albatrosses of contracts. Like when you can... Makar and Taves will make 16. That could be McDavid. One deal. So they're more manageable contracts.
Well, you have four or five guys taking maybe $1 million a year under what they could get just to like buy in. And that extra $5-6 million adds up to Martin Nietzsche's, you know? Yeah. So like, yeah, it really does add up.
So I don't think you can have that many high dollar value contracts and still compete. You look at the Lightning, none of their guys even make 10 million. They're all under 10. And that goes for Vasilevsky to Hedman to Kucherov to Point to Gensel, all of them. They're all 10 and under. That's how you do it. So these teams like the Toronto Maple Leafs and the soon-to-be Edmonton Oilers, where you're paying multiple players over $10 million, it's tough. It's tough to round out your lineup and make a consistent, deep contender. Yeah, you can win a round, but you got Matthews and Nylander and Tavares and Marner, and they're all 10 plus. Soon to be 12, 13, 14 plus. It's tough. So we'll see how this shakes out. But yeah, not good for the Edmonton Oilers in their first two games. What's the total score? They've given up 12 goals in 2 games. It's just embarrassing. It's absolutely embarrassing. All right, moving on. What's not embarrassing? Another 2-0 series. Capitals and Habs. Could easily be 2-0 Habs. Could easily be 1-1. What's going on in this series, Tim?
Yeah, the Capitals won game two, obviously, again, playing at home. It was a 3-1 game, but McMichael's empty net came with just seconds left. So it was really 2-1 the entire time. And they relied super heavily on Logan Thompson. I was reading some of the post-game pressers with Dylan Strome and even the head coach there, Carberry, and they basically all praised Thompson, especially in the final 5 minutes or so. He had 14 saves in the third period. That's a lot. That is a lot. So, yeah, really big for him. What's interesting, too, is the Canadians shortened their bench in the third, too, and they needed a goal. And Armia had one shift in the third. Patrick Laine, the goal scorer, had zero shifts in the third period. He did not play. So it's one of those situations where I think the Habs are actually playing pretty well. Like, you're getting some good players from Suzuki and Caulfield and Lane Hudson, although he wasn't great in this game. But the Capitals are just better. That's really what it is. Montreal was the last team at the dance. They are happy to be here. They are going to win a game. I don't think they'll be swept, but the Capitals are just a better team, which is what I predicted when we talked about this series. I'm like, this is a fun story, but when we get to the playoffs, we're just going to be reminded why the Capitals finished first in the East, and so far we're seeing it.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. I don't know how this series shakes out. I feel like Montreal's been right there. I can't sit here and just go, Washington's been the better team. Because when you watch the games, it could have gone either way. McMichael's first goal was a fluke. He throws it off of Savard's ankle and it goes in the net. If he doesn't score that, it's 1-0 Montreal. But maybe that's the end of the game. But to your point, you need more from Patrick Laine and Ivan Demidov and those second tier guys if you're Montreal in order to succeed. Gallagher's been playing great. Caulfield, Suzuki, and Slafkovský, you need more from that line. That they've been thoroughly outplayed so far. So I do think there's more there for this team. And they're playing with Capitals. Like, it's yeah, not a one-sided affair like LA Edmonton. Like, these are even games. Both games could have easily gone to Montreal. Obviously they lose in overtime first game. And this game here, they're winning for the majority of the game until McMichael gets that fluke bounce. But the difference maker is, you nailed it on the head, Logan Thompson. He's playing terrific. Terrific, terrific hockey. He's been the difference maker for this team because Montreal's been good. And Washington really hasn't been that strong. It hasn't been a drastic, oh, this is the second wild card team, this is going to be a walk. And like we talked, like we predicted, this is a hell of a series. I firmly believe Montreal can go into the Bell Center and rip off two straight wins. That's it. I think these guys are confident. They know they can play with this team. And once they get a couple goals, once Slafkovský kind of shakes out of this funk, once Suzuki and Caulfield get confident, I don't know. I could easily see them tearing off four straight wins and winning this series. So we're far from done here. But I think Laine needs to go. I think he needs to sit. I think you're seeing the real Patrick Laine come to the forefront now, where he's complaining a little bit. He was salty when Demidov came to the team, kind of giving comments like, well, he hasn't even played a game and we're already anointing this guy. We'll see how he does it when he gets to the NHL. Like, you could tell his attitude has changed a little bit. He went from the power play superstar, like 13 goals in the power play, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, you know what? This guy's, he's just not a good, well-rounded hockey player. Like, he's a very one-dimensional type guy. Power play, put him in a spot, and he's got a hell of a shot. Do I want him in the playoffs? Dude, can I rely on him, Tim, to make that play? Can I rely on him to really work it on the half boards and get the puck out when we need him to get it out? Or is he going to shy up when a D-man's pinching on him? They're going to keep the puck in, and they're going to score. I think that's the Laine we're getting. And Martin St. Louis knows it. You got 11 shifts last game, and that's it. Benched all in the third period. Rightfully so. I think you continue to see that. I would like to see Demidov play a little more. But again, you're an 18-year-old kid from Russia and you're thrust into the playoffs. So I don't know if this is the spot for him to kind of work out the kinks in the NHL. So Martin St. Louis is doing what he has to do. He's playing the crap out of Suzuki, Slafkovský, Caulfield. He's relying on his veterans, Gallagher and Anderson. And so far, they're playing great. They just haven't cracked that nut, so to speak. The defense played well. I think Hudson had a better game. So I will predict this series will be 2-2 going back to Washington. I think Montreal will win the next two games. That's how good they played. And Montembeau, right there, tops. Terrific. Absolutely terrific goaltending this series so far.
I hope you're right. I hope they do.
Let's move on. Carolina Devils, Tim. What are we doing there?
Same one. Yeah, this is the boring series. I don't think we spent a lot of time on this. Carolina is up 2-0. This is the one, maybe one or two that I'm looking at that I think probably end up will being sweeps. I just don't see a whole lot from the Devils that prove otherwise. And the thing that I want to point out with this is that, and you know, back, you know, maybe 10 days ago or so, the Carolina Hurricanes finished with a two-game road trip. I think it was Montreal and Ottawa. And Rod the Bod pulled a couple of his top guys aside and said, hey, you guys are staying home. We're going to get some rest, get ready for the playoffs. We're going to, you know, finish these two games without you. And that was Aho, that was Jarvis, that was Jackson Blake. That was Jordan Staal, Martin Nook, Slavin, Chatfield, maybe one or two others. And so far it's paying off. Like, you're seeing these guys. There's no rust. There's no fatigue. They are dominating. They are a very good team with being led by these top guys. So I don't have a whole lot more to say about this particular series. I think it's kind of boring. I think we'll see who Carolina plays in the next round. But to me, this is just about all but over.
No, I don't want to disagree. I can see Carolina sweeping this, but I think New Jersey did a good job in game two. They brought the physical aspect to this game. They were banging. And they were frustrating Carolina a little bit. I think game one, Carolina just did what they wanted. They were able to break out. They had no pressure. I know Sheldon Keefe must have told him, he's like, we're outskilled, you guys. We got to start banging. And then they go into this game. Dawson Mercer's throwing his body around. Eric Holla, for Pete's sake, was flying around the ice. And Bastion, these guys were making a concerted effort to just try to make life difficult for the Carolina Hurricanes. And it worked. Obviously, Carolina wins 3-1. But I don't know. I don't think – what's that?
They have two goals in two games. There's really nothing to be
– what no, do you, I know. What do you, they're offensively terrible. But I do think they're trending in the right direction. If they could somehow, some way, get that first line to do something and Pelad, Hirscher, and Timo Meier has been absolutely atrocious. Like, can we just say San Jose definitively won that trade? Like, that was awful. He's been an abject failure with the New Jersey Devils, but they need that line to score a goal. They were dash two in game two. They were just absolute. Hirscher with a terrible, terrible turnover. Absolutely terrible turnover led directly to a Carolina goal. So it's I don't want to put a fork in them to say they're dead. I do think they have the ability to win one game, but that's not saying much. I think they lose a series going away, either 4-1 or 4-0, but it is a pretty boring series. I'll agree with you there. All right. Jets and Blues, another series that's kind of just flying under the radar.
Yeah.
But it's been really, really good hockey. It's two teams that are physical, that are heavy, that both play the right way. They have veteran forwards, and it's just a typical playoff game where they're playing tight hockey. The goaltenders are all playing well. The defensemen aren't stepping out of pocket and taking risks and giving up breakaways and two-on-ones. It's not like, you look at the Oilers game. The Kings are getting breakaways left, right, and center. Look at the Vegas Golden Knights Wild game. They're getting two-on-ones and breakaways, lots of offensive chances. The Blues Jets, It's a chess match. It's zone to zone to zone. You're not seeing these home run plays. You're not seeing Mitch Marner being sprung by Austin Matthews for a breakaway. That ain't happening. These guys are playing smart hockey. They know one goal could be the end of the game. And that's okay. And so it's a great game. The Jets win game 2-1. Very close game. Going back to St. Louis, I firmly think St. Louis, much like Montreal, could win the next two games. That's how close this series has been so far, but we'll see how this shakes out. It's a very, for the old school hockey fan like I am, for the guy who likes good 5-on-5 smash mouth hockey, defensive minded style of hockey, it's been a lot of fun. But the Blues need to score more. I think they're getting outplayed 5-on-5. Tim, you have it here. There's only one goal 5-on-5 so far this series.
Whether you're screaming from the stands or the sofa, Virgin Bet has even more for you to shout about this season. Because we're giving you a totally free bet builder on a selected football match every week this season. So get ready to make some noise. Join us and claim your bet builder free bet every week. Virgin Bet, a good bet. Use bet builder free bet on selected match by kickoff. Min odds evens. Max one free bet, £1 to £20. Except via pop-up. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Bet responsibly. Gamblerware.org.
You're not going to win much if you get one goal 5-on-5. So we need to see more. Scheifele's been the best player in the series. I think he's been terrific. Jordan Kyrou, where are you? Robert Thomas, you got to step up. We need to see more out of their star players. So we'll see. But yeah, it's been a fun series to watch, but not really spicy to talk about. Just because it's good, solid hockey. Well-coached teams, well-schooled vets that know how to play the game, and they know, well, I'm not going to turn the puck over at the blue line. I'm not going to try to make a fancy play here. I'm not going to pull a Darnell Nurse and try to get out of the zone. No, I'm going to stay behind the puck, stay below it, play smart defense, and live to play another day. And that's what's happening here. You're not going to get those exciting offensive plays that we see in the other series just because these guys are too good. They know what happens when you make that play and it ends up in the back of your net. All right. Anything else on this one, Tim?
No, I want to talk about the Leafs Senators. That's the one that I think we spend maybe a little bit of time on. The Leafs are up 2-0, as everyone knows. And I think, to oversimplify, the Leafs are just the better team. This is a little bit like some of the other series we'll talk about. It's just like they're a better team. They're playing like it. I think you have to give some credit to the Senators for forcing overtime in game two. But the overtime goal that Max Domi scored highlighted a couple of problems with the Senators. One was that bad turnover by Batherson. Just bad turnover, stupid pass right in the offensive zone. Like in the NHL, that's going to get picked off, you know, 9 times out of 10. Doesn't really hustle back on the back check. And then you have Dylan Cousins trying to do a flyby to take that puck away instead of taking the body and eliminating him, which you could have done. You had the positioning for that, but you don't. And Domi just kind of just tucks the puck through and rips the goal. And so you kind of get exposed a little bit there. But I think generally the Leafs have been the better team so far.
Yeah. And they're expected to be. They win the Atlantic Division. Ottawa is a wild card team. But again, much like Habs series, much like the Devils series, this is far from over. I think the Senators were disciplined. They were able to stay out of the box. They only had, what, one penalty? And obviously Toronto capitalizes on it. They went 1-for-1 in the power play. But you need more. You have to play better. I think Toronto is a terrific hockey team. They're a Stanley Cup contender for a reason, and the Senators are still trying to find out who they are in the playoffs. Are we a physical team that are in your face? Are we a more composed team? Are we a defensive team? Are we a run-and-gun team? They're still trying to figure all that out, but I think they're learning, much like the St. Louis-Winnipeg series, when to take chances. When should I like try to make that cross-ice pass? When should I just chip it out and live to play another day? I bet you Drake Batherson learned it the hard way. It's like, shit, shouldn't do that. Back of my net. Now we're down 2-0. Lose the game. Dylan Cousins, you think he's regretting that stick check, trying to go on offense? Because it was a 50-50 puck. I understand what he's trying to do there. He's trying to chip it by Max Domi and get up the ice. Slides through his triangle. Max Domi's right in the middle of the ice with the puck, and he flies it by Omar. You think Dylan Cousins is going to make that mistake again? These are these things that teams have to go through in order to be successful. And we've seen it. We talked about it a lot. All these, you know, dynasties start with teams just failing, getting swept by Columbus if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, if you're the Chicago Blackhawks, getting waxed by the Detroit Red Wings. If you're all these teams, you see what it takes to win, what it takes to win a series, what it takes to win a Stanley Cup. And I think this is what's happening with the Ottawa Senators right now. It's not the regular season. There's no live to play another day. There's no, we'll get them next game. No. This is it. Every game is do or die. It's so important, every single play, how you manage to puck, what you do on that shift. You can't just take a shift off. And Dylan Cousins and Drake Batherson and all of these guys are learning that. And it stings. It's hard because, you read the papers today. If you're Drake Batherson, you're like, oh my gosh, public enemy number one. What am I doing? But he'll learn. He'll be better next game. I bet you if the same situation happens, he's chipping it out. Going to make smart play.
Well, I think another big problem for the Senators has been the goaltending. Linus Ullmark has to be better. He has an 800 save percentage and a 4.39 goals against after the two games. So he said something similar after game two as after game one, where he's just like, hey, we bounce back, short-term memory, like we'll be fine. But you need more from him. And the Leafs are used to getting out goalie. That's been, among many other things, one of their huge problems the last, 5 to 7 years. And they're not getting out goalie. They're getting great play from Stolarz. He's like a 9.34 save percentage, something like that. And they're getting, they're getting to the other goaltender. So I think we'll see that more in game three. And this kind of ties into my big question for you. And I know the series isn't over, a long way from, but does this seem like a different Leafs team to you? Or is it just a case of them looking good compared to who they're playing against, which is a team with no playoff experience?
No, it feels different, doesn't it? It feels like this team is just, even though they're not built differently, they're pretty much the same across the board from last year to this year. They are playing the game differently. They're winning these tight games, and they're not taking chances and sacrificing defense for offense. I think the Craig Berube style has finally soaked in. It takes a long time to change what you've learned under another coach, Sheldon Keefe, because those guys, that's all they knew coming into this league. It was Sheldon Keefe. It was run and gun. It was speed. It was east-west. It was layering and finding speed in lanes. And Craig Berube is like, let's get the puck and drive it down their throat. I don't want to come back with it. I don't want to go east-west. I want to use our speed and talent, but if there's nothing there, throw it on the net. Let's go. Like, let's get down their throats. And I think it's finally sunk in that this is how you win hockey games, especially in the playoffs. And it's translating into playoff success. And yes, Ottawa is a weaker team and they'll have tougher tests next series when they play Tampa or Florida. But it looks like a different team. And it also doesn't hurt that you have, like you mentioned, a solid goaltender back there for when things do break down and we do make a mistake. Anthony Stolarz has played terrific. So yeah, this is a different Toronto Maple Leafs team. I think they're a tougher out. They're heavy, they're methodical, and they're just mature. It feels like Matthews and Marner and Nylander, especially those three, they get it a little bit more. So we'll see how that kind of turns out in series two when times really get tough and maybe you're down a goal or down two goals and you're tested. It's easy to play the right way when you're up by two and you're kind of just not coasting, but you have a lead, you have that cushion. When you're down one, do you still stick with your tendencies or do you go back to what you knew and what is easier? So that'll be the test to me when they're down by one or two, what team shows up.
So we got to move along just because we still have three more series we haven't even gotten to. But the five that are 2-0, which one do you think is most likely to be a sweep?
Yeah, I said it's Kings Oilers. Yeah, I think they'll get swept. Unfortunately, how great would that be? I'm doing a show on Saturday with an Edmonton beat writer or whatever. My old buddy Sean Bell. I'm just gonna wax the Oilers. It's gonna be fun to just rip on them. But no, I think. What about you? Devils, Canes, probably.
Yeah, there's nothing there that shows otherwise to me. So,
all right, let's move on to the one series that I think either team could win the Stanley Cup. It's funny when you fill out your brackets. There's two series, Tampa, Florida, Dallas, Colorado. If you lose that first round, theoretically, you could lose your Stanley Cup matchup. Because I'll be honest, I took the Avs to the Stanley Cup final. And I took Tampa Bay to the Stanley Cup final.
Me too.
They could both lose in the first round.
Yeah.
And then your bracket is busted. It's just an amazing thing. So obviously game three went in Colorado. They swept in Dallas and they go home. Gabe Landeskog making his return and they lose. They lose 2-1 to the Dallas Stars. Tim, what did you think of this game?
Yeah, well, first of all, the Landeskog thing was awesome. You know, he gets the Landy chance, like just the full building at home, a lot of fun. And I didn't realize this cool little stat. He's the third NHL captain to return after missing more than 1,000 days. And the two other guys that did that in the entire history of the NHL were both missing time because they were fighting in World War II. Like that's the historic level of comeback here. But yeah, it's crazy to me that the Stars are winning the series. And I don't mean to like dismiss how talented they are, but the Avalanche with all the momentum they had, and the Stars don't have Miro Heiskanen. They don't have Jason Robertson. They are relying on Cody Ceci to play 24 minutes a night. And yet they're up 2-1 in the series. It's pretty astounding.
Let me tell you, Tyler Seguin coming back missed, I think, the final 58 games of the regular season. Whew, looks terrific. Gets the game-winning goal, takes the puck off his skate to his stick, and goes short side on Mackenzie Blackwood. He's been absolutely terrific for this Dallas Stars team. Like, really, really solid. But the reason they're winning this series is Jake Oettinger. Is it not? Like, he has been absolutely filthy. He saves everything. It's fun to watch. And when you're Mackenzie Blackwood and you're playing the way that you're playing, it's got to be maddening to look across the ice and go, this guy's better. Like he's a better goaltender than I am. And Mackenzie Blackwood's playing lights out. Dallas has been peppering him with shots. He's been just as good as Jake Oettinger, but not better.
Right.
Jake Oettinger right now, I think, is playing the best hockey in the NHL. It's amazing the saves that he's making. And it obviously doesn't help that the Avs power play has been just atrocious. What are they now on this series?
0 for 6 on just in game three. Like that is crazy. And the thing is, I think they've been the better team. The Stars have held the lead for less than 2 minutes across all of these three games total. And yet they're up 2-1 in the series. They have another home game before they have to go back. They're playing Colorado next. Sorry, excuse me. But still, I still think this one goes the distance. But I thought this would be 2-1 or even 3-0 Colorado by this point. And I have to give a lot of credit to Oettinger and the rest of the Stars team that they got this far.
Yeah, they're just playing really good. The coach lined up Ranton on the first line, trying to kickstart him. It didn't really work. He picked up an assist. But I just think at this point it's Jake Oettinger. There's no other way to look at the series and say that Dallas is winning this series other than him. He's playing lights out hockey. Their defense has been solid, but yeah, when you're playing Cody Ceci 25 minutes, it's not great. I'm not bashing Cody Ceci. A little bit I am, but gosh, it's just, the guy's put on a clinic. It's fun to watch. All right, moving on. What are we talking about next?
The Panthers have only played one game against the Lightning so far. This one's a little bit behind. They play again tonight, but they won that game 1-0 by a lot. And sometimes you can pinpoint, and I mean, you can't ever really, but sometimes you can pinpoint a single reason why a team wins a game. And I think that as close as we can come to that point from this game, the Panthers went 3-for-3 on the power play. You know, you realistically, coaches want, if they get three chances, like, they'll take one goal. Like, that's what they want. You get one on the power play. Maybe if you get 3 or 4 or 5, maybe you hope for 2, but that cannot happen if you're Tampa. And I was reading about this morning, because Tampa started really, really bad at the start of the season. After like 15 games, they were at bottom 5 in the penalty kill. Then they went on and they worked on and they made some adjustments, and they were very, very strong for the whole rest of the season, to the point of one of the best in the team. So I think they will bounce back, but that's a great case of just taking advantage of an opportunity if you're Florida Panthers.
Yeah. And this shame on Tampa Bay. They should be better. They have solid D-men and forwards who can kill penalties. You got Hagel and Point. You got Cirelli. McDonough, yeah. And Hedman. What's that?
Cirelli.
Yeah. Like, you have the horses. You just have to be better. So they'll throw this game away. I feel like the score is not indicative of how good Tampa Bay is, but boy, it's just, I think Tampa's getting the taste of their own medicine with this cap circumvention, because they've been the kings of this for the last 3-4 years, and they've taken advantage of it, obviously, with Kucherov. Now, all of a sudden, Florida does it to them with the injury in quotations to Matthew Tkachuk. You get a Brad Marchand, you get Seth Jones, and this team is dangerous when everyone's humming. And obviously, you're hitting the Sam Bennett playoff. Sam Bennett throws his cape on, and he's playing fantastic hockey. So, I don't know. This is going to be a Game 7 series, but it was not a good first parlay for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And Matthew Tkachuk, just, man, he's a different cat. Like, he's good. And it just feels like when the playoffs hit, he just ups his level, doesn't he? He loves it. Chewing on that stupid mouth guard, just in everybody's faces. He seems to be always around the net. And this is the Panthers team. As soon as they got rid of Huberto, bring in Matthew Tkachuk, they're a good team. And they score the same way every single damn season, and no one's ever figured it out. All their goals come within 5 feet of the net. That's how they score. They go to the net and they say, get me out of here. Try to get me up. See if you can. You can't? Okay. That this is where I'll be if you want to find me. 5 feet within the crease. And no one's figured out how to get them off of that crease. Sorry, moving on. Last series. I like this series. This is one that I wasn't sure how it was going to play out, just because the Wild kind of limped into the playoffs. They were injured with Kaprizov and Eriksson Ek, not really having that momentum. This is a hell of a series. I've watched this both games. It's going to be a good one. This is another 7-gamer, Tim. And this was a sleeper that I didn't know how it was going to span out. But the Wild thoroughly, thoroughly worked the Vegas Golden Knights in game 2, to the point where I think Vegas just gave up. It was 1-0. It was 2-0. It was 3-0. It was 4-0. And it was the good goals. If you want to watch a beautiful play, like if you're a painter, you listen to Picasso. You know, if you're into music, you listen to the Tragically Hip. If you're into cars, you like Ferraris. If you're into hockey, go watch Kirill Kaprizov's pass to Matt Boldy for the first goal of this game. It's beautiful. It made me cry. I'm tearing up right now just thinking about it. Kaprizov blocks the shot in his D zone. The puck goes to the half wall. He does the moon, opens up with his skates, just kind of gives himself a position. He almost one-touches it off the boards to a streaking Matt Boldy, who has Shea Theodore on his hip. I don't think the puck touches the ice. It just lands right on Matt Boldy's tape. It was that good. Boldy corrals it on his backhand, goes in and scores on Aiden Hill, who was playing terrific to that point. And it just kick-starts the Minnesota Wild. I wish you knew hockey better, Tim, to appreciate just how great this play was. Tim separates his shoulder even looking at the ice. It's just how he is. It's how he's made. I'm just kidding. This busting your chops. But it was, you saw the goal. Did it not just make you smile looking at that play?
I mean, there's a few things better than a good saucer pass like that, especially one that's like across, you know, 100 feet. So it was really cool. And Boldy even said after the game that it was the most beautiful pass he ever seen. And Marcus Foligno sitting next to him, and he's like, that's rude. I actually sit on your first NHL goal. So it's just cool. And yeah, and I think you were right. I overlooked this series. I thought this maybe goes five. Like, I didn't give Minnesota much of a chance at all. And they were right there in game one, and they take game two pretty decidedly. So this could be the distance or even skewed towards Minnesota's way.
Yeah, the coach, John Hines, flipped the line up a little bit. He jumbled around the center when Marco Rossi's now centering the third line. Ryan Hartman bumped up to the third. Sorry, Rossi's the fourth line. Hartman's bumped up to the third line with Foligno and Nyquist. And that line, Tim, they're a handful. Foligno's banging bodies. Hartman's driving the net with no issues for bodily harm. He's taking it to the net. He's taking it hard at Reinhardt. It's so funny when you look at players. And I was critical of Brady Tkachuk of this, and maybe he's kind of shed that reputation. Hartman gets so many grade A chances just because he's got the speed and he has that mentality. I'm driving the puck to the net regardless. If he were to score on 30% of his chances, the guy'd be a 40 goal scorer. He just doesn't have that finishing touch. But you put him with Nyquist and Foligno, and they're a handful for this Vegas Golden Knights team. They scored last night. Marcus Foligno obviously jumping like his dad after he scored. But I don't know. This is another series. Like you said, we could be in for a long one. 6-7 games. The Knights, you think you're set. You're playing a wild card team. Team's injured. This Gustafson's playing good. Brock Faber's playing solid. Spurgeon, Bogosian. There's going to be some upsets in this first round. It's a lot of fun. But listen, I've been talking for a long time. Let's get some quick hits and get out of here.
Yeah, the big news yesterday was that Lou Lamoriello's contract will not be renewed as the president and GM of the New York Islanders. End of a long, and I would say fruitful era. I know they didn't win a cup and they had some disappointments too, but he also basically rebuilt this team. They went to the Eastern Conference Finals once. Like they have been a pretty good story for a lot of his tenure. So effective immediately, they are going to start a search for a new GM. There's all kinds of lists being thrown around on who will come in and replace him and whether Lou is done in the NHL. Does he get some senior vice president hockey operations and advisements, like whatever. Who knows what that'll be. But he won't go too far. But yeah, end of an era in the island.
Man, listen, I said they should have fired him years ago. So it's just, you know. What?
Just there's another end of an era here on this team. Cal Clutterbuck announced on Instagram his retirement. And the video is just kind of like, hey, I don't even know what to say or how to do this. So I'm just going to just tell you the truth. And pretty cool. He was the all-time hits leader for the NHL, which is pretty impressive. And I know he's a good old pal of yours.
Yeah, no, obviously from Welland, Ontario, a stone's throw from where I grew up in St. Catharines, a little bit younger than I am, but I played with him in Houston. Play with him in Minnesota. We crossed paths throughout my whole career. So good for him. Yeah. Just probably one of the most effective fourth lines in hockey, him, Martin, Casey, Cizikas. So they found a home in New York. They played well. He's 37 years old. And yeah, he's old, man. Played 1,000 games. He had a great career. I think he was a third rounder in Minnesota in 2005, 2006, but good for Cal. We should get him on the show. He's a nice kid. Good career for him. But yeah, back to Lou. I feel like he gets a lot of accolades. I disagree. I think he's been atrocious on the island. Like, yeah, they had that run where they made the Eastern Conference Finals for 3 years, but he consistently blows it at the deadline. He consistently blows it in free agency. He valued veteran leadership over youthful players who could make the team better. He was constantly squashing young guys who wanted to maybe play a different way, and he would just stifle their growth. And I feel like he was a bad GM. So yeah, I know it's dumping on a guy when he's retiring and this and that and the other thing, but let's not forget how terrible of a spot the Islanders are in right now. You got Matthew Barzal, you got Horvat, Anders Lee, Kyle Palmieri, you got Pageau, you got Anthony Duclair. Like, you have a lot of bad contracts. So whoever takes this job, they're in for a rough roster rebuild. It's just, it ain't going to happen. So, all right. Well, one last one. Speaking of teams on New York making terrible decisions, Chris Drury has been extended by the New York Rangers to a multi-year contract. Terms have not been released, but owner of the team, James Dolan, came out and he said, I'm fully supportive of Chris Drury and what he's doing here. He's doing a great job, this, that, and the other thing. So people are crazy. James Dolan is an idiot because Chris Drury has just, he's really turned this Stanley Cup contender into a dumpster fire pretty quick too. Like, he's done a great job with it. So players don't want to be there. The players who leave aren't too complimentary of New York or the staff or the organization. They're quick to just throw everybody under the bus, Kaapo Kakko and Jake Trouba and all these other young guys who just like, trade me. I don't want to play here. So, but he extended him. So good for them. We'll see how that pans out. I'm sure Zibanejad and Panarin and Fox are like, great. That's great. And he's around for long. All right. Anything else, Tim?
Just want to give a quick shout out to Brian, who's the newest member of our Patreon. Thank you for joining, Brian. It's only $5 a month. So you can join too. Just $5 a month gets you access to our Slack community, discounts on merch, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So come check us out there and have a great weekend, everybody.
Yeah, we give you Tim's cell phone number too if you join Patreon. So you can be in constant contact with Tim. And Tim loves it because he's a very needy person. And so he's just getting text messages all the time. He's fantastic. His wife doesn't like it, but he is a big fan of it. So yeah, join our Patreon and we'll have some fun. If not, we'll talk to you guys next week. Have a good weekend. There could be some series that ended. It'll be fun. Cheers, everybody.
Whether you're screaming from the stands or the sofa, Virgin Bet has even more for you to shout about this season. Because we're giving you a totally free bet builder on a selected football match every week this season. So get ready to make some noise. Join us and claim your bet builder free bet every week. Virgin Bet, a good bet. Use Bet Builder free bet on selected match by kickoff. Min odds evens. Max one free bet, £1 to £20. Except via pop-up. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Bet responsibly. Gamblerware.org.